Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Flatiron Crossroads Radio Hour, where the best in live entertainment lives. The Flatiron Crossroads Radio Hour is produced in Gloucester, Virginia, directly across the street from Flatiron Crossroads, which is a nonprofit organization focused on entertainment education and live performances. You can find out more at flatironcrossroads.com. This show tonight is brought to you by Gloucester attorney Bill Johnson, dedicated to the arts, dedicated to his clients. Learn more at johnsonlawcenter.com. This week, we're going to highlight an artist who is set to play live at Flatiron on May the 7th. He is Roy Bookbinder. Roy Bookbinder traveled with legendary Reverend Gary Davis in the late 60s. Then the Book recorded his first solo acoustic blues album in the 70s, which was the first to receive 5 stars in Downbeat magazine. Then in the late 80s, the Book was part of Bonnie Raitt's East Coast Tour, which included an appearance at the Grand Ole Opry, which led then to almost 30 appearances on Nashville Now's Ralph Emery Show. This week's show is a little bit different. It's a replay of a Roy Bookbinder interview conducted by Dave Carter from Studio One Live Performance Radio on WETS-FM in Johnson City, Tennessee. So let's get to it. Here's Dave Carter and his interview with Roy Bookbinder on the Flatiron Crossroads Radio Hour.
For those that are not familiar with Roy Bookbinder, he's a walking history book of this music and studied with many of the greats, Reverend Gary Davis, Pink Anderson, to name just two, and along the way has collected the stories and tales and the music and made the songs his own. You know, you don't do a note-for-note identical interpretation.
Well, I tried to when I was young, and I couldn't do it. And thank goodness I ended up with a unique style of my own that people are hot to learn now. I teach it, just taught at the Swannanoa Gathering, and I've taught at the Augusta Heritage Workshop. And every year I spend 3 or 4 weekends at the Fur Peace Ranch. That's Yorma Kalkinen's guitar camp in Ohio.
Yorma was at Merlefest this year.
Yeah, that was my doing.
Good for you.
Yeah, we might have him back, too. He went down terrifically. Boy, wherever Yorma was, there was a big crowd, and people like Sam Bush were all excited to play with him. A lot of people got their first taste of acoustic blues through Yorma because he was a rock star with the Jefferson Airplane.
Then Hot Tuna came
along.
And
Hot Tuna.
Well, I tell you, why don't you play a couple of tunes? I know you have a brand new CD out. You going to play any tunes from it?
All right. Here's an old song that came out in 1935. Reverend Gary Davis was just called Blind Gary before he got religion, and Blind Gary Davis went up to New York with Blind Boy Fuller and Sonny Terry, who was a blind harmonica player. 3 blind mice headed to New York on the train. They hit it big.
Sonny Terry from Johnson City.
No.
Yeah. Sonny Terry, wasn't he from Johnson City? Brownie McGee, one of them was.
Brownie McGee was from Kingsport.
Kingsport, okay, that's the connection.
Sonny was from up the mountain there, on the other side of South Carolina. Gary Davis was from Greenville. They met in Durham, where they used to sing on the streets during the tobacco picking season when the money was there. And Gary recorded 2 beautiful blues songs when they got to New York on an old national, on a new national guitar. Then he got religion. The big city will do that to some. And he asked if he could record some Christian songs, and they told him, well, if he had to. And he recorded 12 of those that were really dynamite songs. And then they wanted more blues, so Blind Boy Fuller got up and recorded a bunch of blues. And before Fuller became an overnight blues sensation, drank himself to death in 23 months.
My.
23 years later, Gary was still there singing on the streets when he got discovered by the folk music crowd. That's a long story. But anyway, on this particular track, Rag Mama Rag, Fuller played it and sang it. And Gary Davis, who wouldn't sing any blues at that time, played the second guitar part. This is on my latest round of record, Polk City Ramble. Get you one gal, better get you 2. One for your buddy and 1 for you. I got a wife and a sweetheart too. Hope my wife don't want me when my sweetheart do. I said, rag, mama, you better rag. Mama, you better rag, mama. Come on, baby, and do that rag. Well, I'm going uptown with my hat in my hand. I'm looking for a woman, ain't got no man. It's like looking for a needle lost in the sand. Come on, baby, and do that rag. Rag mama, you better rag mama. You better rag mama. I said, come on, baby, and do that rag. Chicken, and she thought it was a duck. She put it on the table with his legs stuck up. In come my sister with a spoon and glass, ooh, dishing out the gravy from his yes, 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 rag mama. You better rag mama. You better rag mama. Come on, girl, let's do that rag. I said, mama got a Cadillac, papa got a Buick. Sister got mad cause he wouldn't let her do it. She might be old about 90 years. She ain't too old for to shift them gears. Rag mama. You better rag mama. Ooh, rag mama. Come on, baby, and do that rag. Money, two for the show, three to get ready, say go cat and go. Come on, baby, and shake that thing. If you don't play, you surely can't win. Rag mama. You better rag mama. I said rag mama. Oh, come on, girl, and do that rag. Night before Christmas and all through the house, not a creature stirred, not a single mouse. Out in the yard, the roads were crashed. It was Santa Claus falling on his big fat. I said, rag mama. Ooh, you better rag mama. I said, rag mama. Come on, baby, and do that rag. Come on, girl, and do that rag.
That's a good old tune. Here's a new song that I made up this summer here. This one's called St. Pete Blues. Take your ups and you take your downs. That's what it takes to make a full go round. I said, hey, hey, baby, you ain't so such much, you know. I'm going back to St. Pete. I'm gonna leave all this rain, sleet, cold, and snow. Papa told Mama how it's gonna be. Mama told Papa, Daddy, you just wait and see. I said, hey, hey, baby, you ain't so such much, you know. I'm going back to St. Pete. I'm gonna leave all this rain, sleet, cold, and snow. Alabama raised. I said, so long, sweet mama. There ain't much that you can say. Hey, hey, baby, you think you really know? I'm going back to St. Pete. I'm gonna leave all this rain, sleet, cold, and snow. Now I told you once, told you twice. You seem to never listen to no one's good advice. I said, hey, hey, baby, you ain't so such much, you know. I'm going back to St. Pete, like I said. I'm gonna leave all this rain, sleet, cold, and snow. mama, you might not like what you see. Oh, you're scheming and you're dreaming, never set your heart free. Hey, hey, mama, you ain't so such much, you know. I'm going back to St. Pete. I'm gonna leave all this rain, sleet, cold, and snow. Yes, you get your ups and you get your downs. That's what it takes to make a full go round. I said, hey, hey, baby, ooh, you ain't so such much, you know. I'm going back to St. Pete. I'm gonna leave all this rain, sleet, cold, and snow. That's a good one, huh?
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to the Flatiron Crossroads Radio Hour, brought to you by Gloucester attorney Bill Johnson, dedicated to the arts, dedicated to his clients. Learn more at johnsonlawcenter.com. This week, a replay of an interview of Roy Bookbinder on WETS-FM in Johnson City, Tennessee. You can get your tickets to see Roy Bookbinder live at Flatiron Crossroads on May the 7th at 6:30 p.m. by going to flatironcrossroads.com. Now, back to the show.
Heard another one I made up recently. This one here I started writing this song as a middle-aged blues song now that I'm approaching middle age. And when I finished it, I realized it wasn't a middle-aged thing at all. It's really a millennium song.
Ah.
It's just the times, the year 2000. You know, there's lots of things that changed, lots of things we used to do we can't do no more.
Even Roy Bookbinder is Y2K compliant.
There you go. It's a funny deal. When I started out in this business, I just wanted to be a hobo that made $100 a week playing the guitar. And now we got a website, www.roybookbinder.com. No space between book and binder in that.
Uh-huh.
We got email. We got email mailing list. We got a cell phone with the one rate. It's unbelievable. I resisted the answering machine when that thing came out. But today you got to have all this stuff because the competition does.
Yeah, that's it.
But I don't know how people like Booker White and Son House would have coped with all this. Anyway, this song's called You Can't Do That No More. And this and that last song are the first two songs for my next record, which I'm going to start working on this winter. It's going to be all original tunes.
Oh, cool.
You know, I've decided in this folk music game, the big money's being made by the singer-songwriters. The blues singers never got credit for being singer-songwriters, though all of us were.
No, that's true.
So it really hit me on the head. When Bill Morrissey put out a blues album, I decided I'm putting out a singer-songwriter album. Tap that market, you know?
We already got a title for it yet?
Yeah, Roy Bookbinder, singer-songwriter.
Cool. That'll be easy to find.
Can't do that no more. You can't do that no more. Ooh, you can't do that no more. Can't do that no more, because things ain't like they was before. You can't do that no more. Don't be smoking cigarettes. Surely don't do dope. And God knows where you're gonna turn when you just can't cope. 'Cause things ain't like they was before. You can't do that no more. Can't do that no more. Ooh, you can't do that no more. Things ain't like they was before. You can't do that no more. Now watch your coffee in the morning, your liquor late at night. Don't stay out in the sun too long. You best stay out of sight, because things ain't like they was before. You can't do that no more. Barbecue could kill you, fried chicken do the same. Country ham, red eye gravy, don't even call their name. Because things ain't like they was before. You can't do that no more. You can't do that no more. You can't do that no more. Ooh, you can't do that no more. Things ain't like they was before. You can't do that no more. Careful where you walk your dog and where you hide the bone. Why women still be the death of you
unless it's on the telephone. Things ain't like they was before, man. You can't do that no more. You can't do that no more. You can't do that no more. Ooh, yeah. Can't do that no more. You can't do that no more. Can't do that no more. I said things ain't like they was before. You can't do that no more. Now you best not drink the water. You better hold your breath. And if you keep on living, it's bound to be your death. Because things ain't like they was before. You can't do that no more. Can't do that no more.
A good tune. Nice hook. Thank you. Just exactly what contemporary songs have got to have is a good hook.
There you go.
So tell me, how did a boy born and raised in New York City got his start playing in the Greenwich Village clubs, make his way down to Florida?
Well, it's a long story. I grew up in New York City, and my family... I was led to believe that New York City was the world, and I had a feeling that on the other side of that bridge, there was some serious stuff going on. So when I was 17, I ran away and joined the Navy, to this disdain of my parents and grandparents and everyone I knew. And they put me on a train out to Chicago, and then down to Norfolk, Virginia. Then they put me on an aircraft carrier, and I saw the world.
But in the Navy's when you started playing guitar.
Yeah, I bought my first guitar in Naples, somewhere over there near Naples, an Air Force base. And some fella from Oklahoma taught me some chords. And another fella from Texas, there were 3,000-4,000 people on this ship. Another guy had some records by Lightnin' Hopkins and Bobby Bland. And at times in the Navy, I did have the blues. You know, I was spending my adolescence out there. And... I started to put it together to play the blues. When I got out of the Navy, I was going to go to junior college, and you know, I was reading Jack Kerouac on the road and all that stuff, and I was ready to be a beatnik. I knew I didn't want anybody to ever tell me what to do again, but I decided I'd go to college. So I was going to Rhode Island Junior College. That's where my father's people were from, and it cost $100 a semester, which wasn't bad. The government was giving me $100 a month on the GI Bill. You got to love this country. And that wasn't bad money back then. And Providence, Rhode Island was right there near Newport, Rhode Island, where the folk festival was. And I started hearing this great music, coffee houses, everything was happening, folk music. 65, Dylan had just gone electric, but it was still a lot of folk music around. And the folk music revival, you know, including the civil rights movement and the political movement of the time, brought forth the Negro singers from the South and the folklorists and the freedom riders. They found people like John Hurt and Booker White and Son House. I got to meet them all.
Incredible.
And it was a brilliant time. So I did junior college for a few years, and that was good. I mostly studied writing, literature things. They finally bounced me out of there because I didn't take any math or science. I was just doing literature. Mm. And they said, oh, how long are you going to be with us? I said, I think I've been here long enough. And I headed back to New York and transferred to the New School for Social Research. God knows what we were going to do there. And I heard a fellow playing like Gary Davis, and that was it. He gave me Reverend Davis's number and ruined my life.
Oh, man, that's where it started.
Yeah, 3 days later, I was on the road with Reverend Davis. At that point, I was living in Greenwich Village and doing open mics. They used to call Hootin' Annies. And the Hooters, as we called them, in those days, they used to line up at the Gaslight Cafe to play for nothing with me, Richie Havens, Janice Ian, Phoebe Snow, and a lot of people, I'm sure, that became doctors, lawyers, and dropouts. But some of them made it big. And that was in the early 60s. Greenwich Village was a very exciting place. Played at Gertie's Folk City, the Cafe Ogogo.
Max's?
Max's, Kansas City. That came late. That was about 72. They opened that.
Yeah.
Well, Sam Hood ran the Gaslight, and they closed that down, and they moved up to Park Avenue to the Max's Kansas City, where I played with Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee many times. They were great. And I was hanging out with Reverend Davis, and
I drove him around for a year and a half or 2 years. We were traveling companions. He was way ahead of me on the guitar, so I hung out more than I took lessons. You know, people say, "Oh, you studied." I said, "Well, yeah, and, you know, I got him Seaguards." And I learned, but it wasn't a very academic approach. A lot of people, you know, transcribed it all onto tape and then onto music notes, and they learned how to play it note for note.
Sure.
But, I mean, the blessing is I couldn't, and I ended up with my own style.
But buried in that style is something that you got from Reverend Davis.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of Reverend Davis in there. He knows it, and I know it.
What's a tune, one of the first tunes you learned from Reverend Davis?
From Reverend Davis. I was very hot. Reverend Davis, of course, was a preacher, and he mostly did Christian songs, and I wasn't into that a whole lot, though it was fantastic. Mm-hmm. So my first mission was to learn the ragtime styles. Now, of course, Candyman, that little ditty, that was the first thing.
Oh, yeah.
That was the song I heard that really tickled my ear and ruined my life. I just had to do it, the syncopation, you know. When I finally called up Reverend Davis and asked him if he could teach me how to play guitar, he said, do you have any money? I said, well, what's it going to cost? He said, $5 to get you started. By then, he didn't need the money, but he figured, you know, if he charged a little bit, he'd weed out the... It's just like when you're playing clubs. If you have a cover charge, you weed out the people that really don't belong there. I'd do anything in this God Almighty world to keep my candy man home. So I got to Reverend Davis's house, and he said, what can you play? I played him a little of the Candyman blues. He said, good God Almighty, it's going to take years to straighten you out. I said, I got nothing but time. He said, I'm an old man. 3 days later, though, he took me with him on the road. I told him I had $50 saved up, and he laughed. He said, that's not enough money to get out of New York City. But at the end of the session, he said, apparently he liked me. He said, you be here tomorrow morning. He said, bring your $50. He said, it won't last long, but I'll carry you. So he took me with me and paid my way all around America. It was quite a deal. And we were in and out. He never went out for more than 2 or 3 weeks. In those days in the 60s, I have some great memorabilia, like old contracts of his and stuff. And back then, a decent gig for Reverend Davis was a coffee house Thursday, Friday, Saturday for $400 guarantee versus a percentage of the door. Of course, ticket prices were about $2 to go in. Times were different. You could still afford a herringbone D-28 back then. Of course, me and Reverend Davis just played Gibson J-200s. That was the Gary Davis guitar. Gary and Elvis loved those big J-200s. Candyman, salty dog. Candyman, salty dog. Candyman, salty dog. You won't be my Candyman, I won't be the salty dog. I asked Reverend Davis about that song. I said, when did you write that Candyman blues song? He taught it to everybody. You know, Woody Guthrie, Jack Elliott, Dave Van Ronk, Bob Dylan played it. It was in he said he didn't write that song. He said it was an old song. I said, well, when did it come out? He said, 4. I said, 4 what? He said, 4. He said, that's 1904. I said, that's an old song. He said, you got it, college boy. So I said to him, what was going on in Greenville, South Carolina, back in 4? He said, he didn't know. He hadn't been to town yet. So I said, I knew my stuff. I said, you were still in Gray Court, South Carolina. He said, that's right. I said, what was going on there? He said, nothing ever went on there. That's why I moved to Greenville. A little red light. Stop on the red and you go on the green. You don't mess with Mr. In-Between. Doing back in 4 when you heard that song? He said, I was a little blind baby boy playing in the mud in front of my mama's house. She was hanging up clothes on a string to dry, and I heard it coming up the street. It sounded like a brass band in a parade. I said, Mama, she said, little Reverend Davis, she always had hopes and dreams for her baby blind boy. He said, what's that coming up the street? She said, that's nothing but old nasty guitar picker. He said, well, you better get me one. I could picture him at 4 years old. Probably looked just like he did when I met him. No hair, no teeth, you know, sunglasses on. Reverend Davis was a cool old guy. And his music, you know, been recorded by the Grateful Dead, Hot Tuna, Peter Paul and Mary, the Blasters, and lots of people. His wife, Mrs. Davis, may she rest in peace, used to say, nobody could ever say I married B. We used to call him B for Brother Davis. Nobody could ever say I married B for his money. Though he turned out pretty good. When she met him, he was singing on the streets for 25 years with a tin cup tied around his guitar. Many times people come up with a knife and cut that guitar string and run off with his guitars. Oh, it's hard times. New York City's a mean town. People came from all over the world to see Reverend Davis, though, in the 60s and 70s. It was amazing. Even in the late 50s, word had spread of his fame. A friend of mine in England, Robert Tilling, put out a book. He wrote a fan letter to Gary Davis, a letter of appreciation, he called it. And I was at the Davis's house that day. I used to answer the mail when I was there. And Mrs. Davis, she could write, but it was a slow process. I looked through the mail, and this one letter was very intelligent, obviously, from an artistic person. And Robert's a famous watercolor painter now, and he was a school teacher. And he plays guitar, and he's a historian, and lives on the Jersey Channel Islands off the coast of France, 5 square miles. And he writes this letter to Gary Davis. So I answer for what Mrs. Davis wants and Gary. And then on the back, I said, P.S., my name is Roy Bookbinder, and I play the guitar and travel with Reverend Davis. And we've been pals for 36 years. And I've been to Jersey Channel Islands. I just did a concert there. The headline in the paper said, Roy Bookbinder's Silver Jubilee Concert. It was the 25th anniversary of my first appearance in the Jersey Channel Islands off the coast of France in the Arts Center. Packed out, 425 people, sold out in advance. And Reverend Davis played there too. And Robert and his wife came here and stayed with the Davises. At one point, he wanted to do a book about Reverend Davis, not an academic thing. He advertised in all the folk and blues magazines. He said that if you had a close encounter with Reverend Davis, send us your story and pictures. And never intended to make any money, but he just wanted to put it together like a Reverend Davis scrapbook. And we got letters from a lot of famous people, a lot of people we never heard of that had incredible stories and pictures. And he finally put the book together, and the great blues scholar Paul Oliver wrote the foreword. They still couldn't get a publisher because it was just a book of love. It wasn't an academic book. So Robert decided he'd put it out at his own expense. They had it printed over there in Jersey Channel Islands, and we sell it at our gigs, and he mail orders it. He still has 300 copies under his bed. It never paid for itself. He gives away so many, but it's a beautiful book. And thank God it came out before Mrs. Davis passed on, and she used to carry the Bible in one hand and Reverend Davis' book in the other. Some famous people wrote in the book. It was hard to get some of them, but I got Manny Greenhill, who was his manager and managed Joan Baez. He finally got in the book right before I called him up, and I said, 48 hours, this thing's going to print, and I want the story. And Yorma Kalkinen from Hot Tuna gave me a last-minute story, and a lot of great people. It's a fantastic book. And besides the pictures and the stories, there's a complete discography and a picture of his birth certificate and his application of blind school and all that stuff. And some early pictures. The earliest picture we found, I think, was taken in 1936 at the New York World's Fair. It's beautiful. It's one of those posed things, and he's wearing a suit, and he's got a watch chain and a nice hat on. His belly's out front. You know, he's all proud about himself. Little red light, little green light. I wished I was down New Orleans, just sitting on the candy man stand. Candyman, etc.
You're listening to the Flatiron Crossroads Radio Hour, brought to you by Gloucester attorney Bill Johnson. Dedicated to the arts, dedicated to his clients. Learn more at johnsonlawcenter.com. This week, a replay of an interview of Roy Bookbinder on WETS-FM in Johnson City, Tennessee. You can get your tickets to see Roy Bookbinder live at Flatiron Crossroads on May the 7th at 6:30 p.m. by going to flatironcrossroads.com. Now, back to the show.
What's it like? You were a mentor to these legends, and now you're the master teaching.
Well, hardly.
I think a lot of people can, you know, think of you that way.
Well, it's funny to play at festivals and be one of the old guys, that's for sure. Man, in the last few years, an incredible thing happened in the blues community. For years, young Afro-Americans avoided this music. And now, after Cap Mo broke through, there's a whole hand, you know, there's five or six or seven young Afro-Americans playing blues, which is a great thing. And some of them are very good. But it's amazing, you know, the press got so excited that they don't really judge them. They just give them credit for being young Afro-Americans that cared. They get nominated for six Handy Awards with their first record, and, you know. But there's a couple of very good players. I'm very impressed with Alvin Youngblood Hart. And Kev Moe is a great gentleman, and we've worked together and had a good time.
Kevin Moore.
Yeah, and he's coming along pretty good. But as time will tell, he's really a singer-songwriter, pop star. They learned a few blues songs and did a nice job, but
The blues songs got everybody's attention.
Yeah, it was that's because Robert Johnson sold 500,000 copies, and then Kev Moe management used that to get into the music world, and it worked. But he was the right one. If I was management, I would have chosen him because he's a great guy. Mm-hmm. He's got the look. He's got a great personality. He's a beautiful singer, mm-hmm. and you could take him to the White House.
We could take Roy Bookbinder up there.
I'm ready.
We have in this live session, you're hearing it as it happens with Roy Bookbinder. And he's obviously knows a lot about the instruments that he plays. Along the way, you have collected some classic instruments that, you know, you've... what really got you interested in the great old guitars?
And the tone and the sound. There's nothing like it. I mean, the woods of the old guitars, you can't get wood like it anymore unless you pay big money from somebody that's got a stash of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, the old pre-war guitars, I believe, were made with red spruce from these mountains here, mm-hmm. and it's illegal to cut the trees anymore.
On Polk City Ramble, your new CD, you play a 93 Martin OM28, a 36 Gibson Nick Lucas special, a number 3 Don, 1935 National steel body.
Yeah, that's a corker.
And is this the Recording King?
Yeah, this is the Recording King. It was a guitar Gibson made for Montgomery Ward's in 1939.
Wow.
It cost $12.75 then. I got two of them. I thought it was a heck of a deal.
But you like it because?
Because it's got the sound.
The sound.
It's got the sound. Of course, my luthier, John Arnold, tweaked it up to really give it the sound. Mm-hmm. And he's the man when it comes to fixing my guitars. Some of those names you mentioned, Leroy Troy is one of my favorite entertainers in America.
Funny guy.
I played a few shows with him, the Tennessee Homecoming. I played there 5 years in a row.
Wow.
And this year, my biggest honor is coming up in October. It's the second year in a row I've been invited, and the first year I could do it. I've been invited to be a featured storyteller at the Jonesboro National Storytelling Festival. How
cool.
about that?
All right. Yeah.
Gives me chill bumps to say it.
Well, this is the other thing that Roy Bookbinder is known for is his storytelling, and I think you heard in Candyman his ability to go on. And you know, you've seen so much and known so many people, special people that,
you know. Boy.
Who's another one besides Reverend Davis? I know Pink Anderson.
Pink Anderson is one of my pals from down the mountain there. He did a lot. He traveled. He recorded two records in 1928. That means four songs, kids. Back then, you got two records on a song. I still wish it was that way because I got two good songs. I'd love to go in the studio and cut it and get it out in the airwaves. But you got to wait till you got 14 for a CD or 15 yet. Take me another 2 years to write that many songs or collect them. Pink used to travel the road in medicine shows. You know, they used to travel around, set up at the end of a county fair or a carnival or a dead-end street and put up a stage on the back of the pickup truck, a big, big old truck, flatbed. And Pink and his buddy Peg Leg Sam would get up there and start a commotion. Peg would be playing the harmonica and dancing on his peg. And Pink would be playing the guitar. You'd get a good crowd around, and then Chief Thundercloud would come out and sell his patent medicine. God knows what was in it. We know what was in it. It was just an excuse to sell church ladies alcohol. And a lot of church ladies drank that medicine, and they didn't care that they had rheumatism anymore or anything. Dandruff, who cares? Give me another bottle of that medicine. And medicine show still works today, really. That's what TV is. Very strange. But anyway, Pink Anderson, he traveled these little carnivals and medicine shows, and his son is now on the circuit. Little Pink Anderson, keep your eyes out. He's a great entertainer. Yeah, he's a grown man in his 40s, and we're about 6'2", and weighs 240, but we call him Little Pink Anderson. We've been doing some shows together. We're trying to get him a record contract, and he's got a couple of good deals going. He lives down in Spartanburg still. Mm-hmm. And we've done some gigs together. He's a great talent. He's the only second generation acoustic blues player that there is.
Is it true Pink Anderson is where Pink Floyd got the pink and the...
Yeah, they got Pink and Floyd from Floyd Council, who was from North Carolina. They had the old Bluesville albums laying on the floor when they needed a name for a group. I heard the story, and they had some, you know, they were looking at these old albums, and they said, "Let's call ourselves Floyd Pink." And one of them said, "Pink Floyd, Pink Floyd." Yeah. They said, "Yeah, we'll do it."
From Pink Anderson.
But Pink never knew about that business.
Play one of Pink's tunes.
Okay. Well, this is funny. It's not Pink. Pink was a collector of songs, also, like many of us. And this is a song he heard. And it's funny how this goes around. A lot of folk songs that have been collected down here. Back in the early 1900s, one of the biggest forms of entertainment was the tent show. And these big tent shows would come south and from New York City, like Broadway shows. They put them in a tent. And one of the big things up there, even in the turn of the century in the early teens, was the minstrel show of white people in blackface with exaggerated eyes and mouths and going, "Mammy," you know. Al Jolson was big. Well, the minstrel show was a very popular form of entertainment. When these minstrel shows, the tunes were written up north by Tin Pan Alley songwriters, and then they'd go on tour. Well, when these minstrel shows set up the tent down in Spartanburg or Jonesboro or Irwin, this was the only entertainment anybody had ever seen except for Uncle Joe playing the fiddle. Mm-hmm. And this was high drama. You know, people were in outfits. And the songs influenced everybody that was around. Many of these songs ended up being the repertoire of people like Pink Anderson and Jimmy Rogers and who have you. Uh-huh. And then 30 years later, college boys from Harvard University calling themselves folklorists came down here and collected folk songs. They were collected songs that were written on Tin Pan Alley in New York. Didn't even know it. Like the most popular song in the history of country music, I believe, is Hank Williams' Lovesick Blues. "I got a feeling gold or blues, the yodel, the whole deal."
Yeah.
That was a minstrel song written by two Russian immigrants on Broadway.
I did not know that.
1926, it was recorded in Asheville, North Carolina by a black-faced minstrel man named Emmett Miller. Record sold big time. He was a great yodeler. He was billed as a vocal contortionist. Like the little jazz band that backed him up, the clarinet would stop and he would yodel, and it was hard to tell. He was that incredible. When he recorded in 1926, Jimmy Rogers was there with his band. He got rejected by RCA, but he was there and he heard Emmett Miller do the yodel. 2 years later, he was in Bristol. He dropped the band and he auditioned again the same time the Carter family did, and he got signed. And he was yodeling. Nothing like Emmett Miller. He didn't have that talent. But he chopped it down to something that he could work. And it worked for him. And then 30 years later, Hank Williams recorded the Lovesick Blues. And where do you think Hank Williams got that little chopped yodel? "I got a feeling called the blues." That's from Emmett Miller. It all goes back to Emmett Miller.
Incredible.
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
Unbelievable. And this is one of those kind of songs that was written up in New York, came down south, and then was collected by the folklorists, just put in the books as folk songs. Very funny. I mean, who was it that said truth is funnier than fiction? "I just want to tell you about a man named Boone. His home was down here in Tennessee. He made his living, he was stealing chickens and anything that he could. See, that Popeye man runs so doggone fast, his feet's never stayed in a row. If a freight train passed, it didn't matter how fast, he'd always get on board. He was a traveling man. Certainly was a traveling man. Ooh, he was the most travelingest man that ever was in that land. He traveled everywhere. He went known for many miles around. He didn't get caught and he never got whooped until the police shot him down. Now you know the police hide an automobile with the purpose just to chase old Boone. Now they chase that man from 6 o'clock in the morning till 7:30 the very next afternoon. Why that Popeye man runs so doggone fast? Fire come from his heels. And he burned up the cotton, he scorched the corn, he could have drove through the farmer's field. You know he was a traveling man. He certainly was a traveling man. He was the most travelingest man that ever was in that land. He traveled everywhere. He went known for many miles around. But he didn't get caught and he never got whooped until the police shot him down. You know this boy went to the spring one day. to get himself a pail of water. The distance that the rascal had to go couldn't have been more than 2 miles and a quarter. He got there and got his water, and then he started back, and the boy stumbled and he fell down. But then he ran back to the house and got himself another bucket, caught the water before it touched the ground. Talk about a traveling man. Lord have mercy, he certainly was a traveling man. He was the most traveling this man. That's right, he traveled everywhere, and he was known for miles around. He didn't get caught and he never got whooped until the police shot him down. I imagine y'all heard about the Titanic ship by now. He was on it when it was sinking down. He was standing out by the port side, baby. You know that he had his head hung down. When that man jumped overboard, everybody said he was a fool. But about 2 minutes right after that, you know he was shooting dice in Liverpool. He was a traveling man. Like I said, he certainly was a traveling man. Ooh, he was the most travelingest man that ever was in that. He traveled everywhere, and he was known for miles around. Didn't get caught and he never got whooped until the police shot him down. Now the police caught this traveling man. They had him up to hang one day. Jurymen all asked him just what did he have to say. He begged the jurymen if they would only bow their heads in prayer. And then he crossed one leg and he winked an eye and he went up through the air. He was a traveling man.
Something of your theme song for a number of years.
I've been doing that song for 30 years. Hard to believe so much time has passed.
You're listening to the Flatiron Crossroads Radio Hour, brought to you by Gloucester attorney Bill Johnson, dedicated to the arts, dedicated to his clients. Learn more at johnsonlawcenter.com. This week, a replay of an interview of Roy Bookbinder on WETS FM in Johnson City, Tennessee. You can get your tickets to see Roy Bookbinder live at Flatiron Crossroads on May the 7th at 6:30 p.m. by going to flatironcrossroads.com. Back to the show.
You've traveled all over Europe, England, the U.K. You've been to Australia numerous times.
Yeah, I've been very lucky.
And all over this country, back and forth, driving yourself, most of the time by yourself.
Well, for 22 years, I lived in a motorhome full-time.
Wow.
With my first and second wife. Not at the same time, mind you. But my new wife's got a house in St. Petersburg, and I live there now. Mm-hmm. I figured that would be a good place to live. So first year I lived in the driveway. Second year I was in 2 or 3 days a week. And the third year we were together. She's got me full-time in the house. But if I'm good on the weekends, we camp out in the yard.
Oh, cool.
You close the curtains and you could be in Yellowstone.
You could be anywhere.
You could be anywhere. You get your Blockbuster video and you're happening. We love camping out in air conditioning, microwave oven, espresso, coffee pot, VCR, CD changer.
Roughing it.
Yeah, I like to get near nature. I don't want to really be out in it. There's bugs out there.
Something I think is real cool is the fact that you have signed with a department store, Burdines.
Burdines.
And have done, something like 20-some commercials for
them. We're up to about 42. I signed a year contract. I was playing a blues festival in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. You wouldn't think they have the blues down there, but. And this song I wrote for my second wife, may she rest in peace in Biloxi, Mississippi, with her new husband. I was singing this song, and the people came up to me, and they said, we want that song. Would you consider doing a commercial for TV? I said, you bet. I've waited my whole life to sell out. So it's a classy department store. It's owned by the same people that own Macy's.